Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back again to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us today. Listen, this is a very important broadcast we're about to do, and I want to direct this specifically to those of you who might be really seriously ill and have a lot of pain and depend on heavy medications to ease that pain, especially if you're one who needs oxycodone, for example, you know, or you need morphine to find relief, and you can't, and you're having problems. This is a broadcast you're going to want to hear. As you may know, over the past 10 years, the public response to the opioid crisis, which means the overuse and the drug overdose problem with people using oxycodone who, you know, are not using it because of their pain, it's been mainly focused on restricting access to medicine to the sickest of the sick. Patients were no longer able to be treated with opiate pain medication, and they were instead being offered ineffective and offered untested alternative treatments like cognitive behavioral therapies, Tai Chi, exercise, and other self-management techniques, which really sounds crazy. Anyway, many people who truly need opiate pain medication have been greatly harmed from this approach, and that's very understandable. It's happening widespread, and it's not being given the coverage that it deserves. And that's the word from our guest today, who is an amazing lady, who points out those suffering from pain and from chronic illness, opioid-based medications are really the only treatment that provides them any semblance of relief and functionality. Our guest, Lauren DeLuca, who's headquartered in Rutland, Massachusetts, is the executive director and the founding president of an organization known as Chronic Illness Advocacy and Awareness Group. It's CIAAG for short. It's a national nonprofit organization focused on the public-private partnership's influence on patients' rights and access to medicines. And it's an amazing story of what they do, what her organization does, and how it all came to be. And I think the best thing that I could tell you this story, but I really think the best thing for me to do is to bring our guest on. Again, Lauren DeLuca is her name. She has a great website. And let me give you the website right at this point. It's CIAAG. That's it, CIAAG.net. And we'll get more into that later on. But let Lauren explain to you her own story and how she came to start this organization. I think you're going to find it pretty fascinating. Lauren DeLuca. Lauren, welcome. Nice to have you with us today. How you doing? You okay?
Very well. It's great to be here. Thank you.
All right. As I said, I could explain this to the audience, but I think your story coming from you even has, you know, more impact. Tell me what really happened to you and what happened when you were denied appropriate medical care when you went to an emergency room and where it went from there. Okay? What was going on? How did it begin?
Yeah, it was really, really been an incredible experience. Back in 2017, I was working full-time as a commercial insurance agent and risk managing professional, and I went to the emergency room with an acute pancreatic attack, which I had suffered a few years earlier once. And it has a very standard protocol. But when I went to the emergency room, I was suddenly told that they were not allowed to treat me with opioid medications and that it was frowned upon now, essentially, and started actually referencing laws and the DEA as a reason that I couldn't have the treatment that I had just received a couple years earlier. And instead, I was actually told to go home from the emergency room instead of being checked in and to try to breathe through it, essentially, coping skills, try to change my diet, things like that. But I was in a true medical emergency, so of course I had to keep pursuing care. And over the next 9 months, I went doctor to doctor trying to explain my situation. I'd lost over 20 pounds in less than 3 weeks because I was unable to eat at all because of what was happening to me. I just kept essentially getting very ill over hours and hours a day. And every doctor just kept kind of referencing some vague law about why they couldn't help me anymore. And everybody kept offering me basically forms of meditation and all these really kind of crazy ideas to help me in a very emergent situation. Eventually, I finally did make it to a doctor. In about 8 months later, they had discovered what was really wrong with me, and I had developed a condition called superior mesenteric artery syndrome, and that was the direct result of not receiving the care I needed because I was left untreated for so long. My stomach and two parts of my intestines essentially collapsed inside of my abdomen upon themselves and prevented me from eating and digesting any type of food. And I was quite literally starving to death, and it was debilitatingly painful. And that's really what ended up getting me to start this organization, is when I went through all of this experience, I couldn't understand why it was happening to me. So I went to the internet and I accessed all the social media groups, and I saw that this was happening widespread and all these people kept talking about it. And one thing led to another. I started the organization to kind of address this problem in society, because I quickly realized, even in my own situation, there was nobody for me to turn to get help. And everybody that was in place to turn to turned me away. And I realized that there was something grossly wrong, as I had understood opioids were legal in this country and the purpose of them was to treat sickness. So I was really thrown into this very, very abruptly and quickly learned that there was something wrong politically. And that's really the root cause of where this organization sprung from, was there was a need in society that I saw nobody was addressing. And it was really impacting some of the most vulnerable people in the country.
And you could not find a doctor who would prescribe an opiate like oxycodone to you. For what reason? Did they say you weren't worthy of it, or your pain wasn't that bad, or did they just not want to deal with the oxycodone issue at all? How would you answer that?
It was kind of a little combination of it all. There was a lot of denying my symptoms. People told me that I was drug seeking, that I wasn't actually in pain, and that that I could be managed through cognitive behavioral health and other measures without needing opiates, that there was new research that said that it didn't need to be given to people and that there was essentially an opioid crisis. And then a lot of other doctors outright told me that they knew I was in serious medical duress and actually told me that they had removed mass loads of patients off of opioids at federal mandate and that they weren't going to lose their license or be arrested in order to help me. So it was really a shocking experience from being either accused of being a liar or being told, I know you're telling the truth, but I'm not going to go to jail because I could go to jail if I help you. And I was just really at a point where I was trying to just essentially live through what I was going through. It was a very shocking experience.
No kidding. I have to ask you, I know you said you had developed superior mesenteric artery syndrome, and in which parts of your stomach and two parts of your intestine had collapsed inside your abdomen. Have you recovered from that, or has that had any lasting effect on you?
I have restored the ability to eat. I did end up needing to get a feeding tube, and that helped restore the compressions were lifted so that they stopped being essentially collapsed when I gained weight. And when that had happened, they were able to remove the feeding tube. But I do have long-term intractable pain and a condition called cyclical vomiting disorder, where I will essentially get very violently ill at the drop of a hat. I could be in mid-conversation and then very violently sick. And I've been living like that for 5 years now. And prior to this incident at the ER, I was a healthy individual. I exercised. I ran races. I was very active in the community. And then all of a sudden, my life went to a screaming halt. Because of a denial of care, that's what was very valid, and that I did need help.
And do you still suffer from chronic, really, really serious pain, or do you have it under control by now?
I do have access to treatment, thank God. But even with that access to treatment, I suffer from severe intractable pain. Basically, I spend my whole day at one facet or another lifestyle adjustments just to manage the pain that I have because my system has been so damaged from the incident.
Wow. And when you say access to treatment, does that mean you have been prescribed, oxycodone now that you can use?
Yes. When
or
they
not?
when they found that I had crushed organs, when it was discovered that I did have crushed organs, I was finally granted access to opioids, which really essentially saved my life. And that's why I do the work that I do today, because I've seen the dramatic impact that not having access can do to someone that the public doesn't seem to understand, that access to opioids in a medicinal standpoint for people with rare disease and chronic illnesses is much, much different than someone who is using it who doesn't have any medical reason to do so outside of, you know, addictive and recreational purposes. And that's really what drove me to do this work, because I could just see how dramatic the impact was on society and how little people even understood that this was taking place, because I certainly didn't when it happened to me. So it was like my whole life flipped upside down in a 24-hour period, and it never returned.
Wow. I have to ask, were you working? I mean, did you have a job, you know, when this really started to disrupt your life? And did you have to leave it?
Yes, I was actually – I did have to leave my job. I had an excellent job. I had just changed to a new company. I had just gotten a new boost in my career, shall you say. And I was working as an executive risk manager at commercial insurance for large businesses and commercial industry players. I used to work with some Fortune 500 companies. So I had a very, very good career. I was young in my career, so I was kind of a rising star at the time. And I had to leave the job within about 6 months. I had left the job, and I've never been able to return.
Wow. Well, what on earth caused you to actually found this organization? I mean, you've really gone above and beyond in this. I don't know if anybody else has done anything like this, but to found this organization called Illness Advocacy and Awareness Group, the Chronic Illness Advocacy and Awareness Group. How long did it take you to come up with that name, by the way? That's very good.
Actually, it didn't take me too long. What was interesting is when this all happened to me, as I said, I was very sick. And I didn't – I was really I guess everything I was doing was thinking to the next moment ahead of saving my own life. I wasn't thinking of a long-term movement when I started this. It was really to just save my own life, because I knew instinctually I was in a lot of trouble. So I noticed that there were pain organizations, but they weren't doing anything. I spoke to them. I asked them what was going on. Everybody pretended that they didn't know and said, oh, there's an opioid crisis, and wouldn't answer any questions about the restrictions, which kind of led me as a business person, as a naturally inquisitive person, to go look. And as I looked, I started realizing that this was a major issue that was affecting millions of people. And knowing what I went through and with the resources that I have and the you know, the personality that I have, I realized that most people were not going to be able to do what I was going to do. Even at the time, even though I was in a very bad place, I was determined in my head that I was going to get help because I knew the alternative, which I was most likely not going to make it. And I knew a lot of other people probably didn't have that ability. So I decided that from my experience, nobody should go through what I went through, essentially. And even if I can't get somebody access to medicine, I can help explain to them why this is happening to you, because the worst thing is to have something like that happen to you, and then everybody you ask questions to say, oh, I don't know, what an awful experience. Can you fill out the survey and tell me about it a little bit, and then find out that they're doing research on your horrible experience instead of helping you. So we decided to become the organization that this community needed, because all the organizations that were out there doing this work, they were really doing work to their own to their own advantage at this point, and the community didn't have real representation. And I decided that since I was in this community now, whether I liked it or not, I had intractable pain, and my life really depends on the decisions that are made politically, and so do a lot of other people out there. And they deserve a voice that actually stands for them and is not using them for their own financial means and growth of their, you know, stock portfolio or whatever else may be. And that's what we're trying to do for that community. And it is something that nobody else would really do. And even when I look at it myself, I'm like, it's kind of crazy how far everything has came, but I never planned it. It just was one step ahead of another in knowing that this community needed someone. And I wanted to also help myself. And it just keeps going that way. 5 years later.
Good for you. Have you ever been involved in anything politically before? I mean, or this the first time for you to do something like this?
It was the first time. I mean, I just kind of started following politics a little bit more heavily in the prior 5 years, but it was still kind of just casually looking at them. So this has been a big learning curve about the political process, about how politics work, even, you know, what agencies exist. So it's been a really big learning process at the same time. But I was always very interested. You know, I was in commercial insurance. I worked representing big corporations. So I think I've always had just kind of a inclination, like a desire to working on strategic issues. So it just kind of came together that this worked out to be a good place for me to do my work. Even though I can't physically work in an office anymore, I can still use my mind if my body's not working with me.
Well, you're doing obviously great work. Do you have any idea how many people, you know, in the country could be affected by, as you have been affected by this?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I know there's different levels of affected, and part of our work has been I'd like to know, because even my own situation I'm not logged in the National Medical Error System. So I'm not even considered a statistic. So there's a lot of people that are not accounted for, but we do know that there is at least 50 million people with daily chronic pain that impacts their function, impacts their ability to live. And it, you know, varies to severity, but we have at least, they estimate between 7 and 9 million in my bucket that are really so severe that the pain medication is kind of the one thing that keeps them functioning. And if you take it away, they end up going through medical collapse and dying very shortly after.
Well, I tell you, if you look at your website, and again, the website is ciaag.net. Pretty simple. You'd be very impressed with what Lauren has done since she founded this organization back in you were really affected in 2017. When did you finally, fund this organization? When did it begin? It's been within the last 3-4 years, right?
I actually founded it in 2017, right in the middle of my medical emergency. I was undiagnosed. I didn't know I had crushed organs. I knew I was in physical trouble, and I quickly realized there was no one for me to help, and I essentially strategized that the only way I was going to get help for myself is if I got somebody to recognize that this was a bigger issue than just me. So I decided to really start a petition that turned into me making kind of just a small Facebook group, and quickly decided to create an organization out of that when I saw how large and vast the need was. And I also noticed, you know, to be quite frank, corporations get more respect than individuals, especially in Washington. So part of my corporation initially was to get the recognition this community deserved by giving them the representation they need. So I did it right probably about 3 or 4 months before I even realized I had crushed organs. I was just going through the motions and deciding, you know, day by day what I needed to do.
Well, you've done a lot. Let's focus on what the intent of the organization is. Basically, what do you do? How would you answer that?
Let's see. That's a very loaded question, but I'd say overall, we work as a liaison between the numerous individuals that kind of have a stake in this game. We have representatives, we have health insurers, we have private citizenry, we have people who are fighting for access to other modalities that are involved, who want with the wellness industry and things like that. So we are trying to be the liaison between those communities to really get our voice into the equation. There's a lot of strategic planning that we have found taking place at the federal level, which is of no surprise. That is what our government does. But we have seen that there's really not been any representation for this community. So our main goal is to help this community get the type of recognition that they deserve, and we do that through public health campaigns on social media. We also have, currently we have 27 coalition partners, which are other corporations that have essentially signed in, and they support our work, they support our mission, they help advance our goals through sharing our work, signing letters to Congress. So we do a lot of different type of work in that nature, and we do mentorship for patients. There is a lot of support groups out there, which I found, but there wasn't a lot of places that were going to teach you anything, as I wanted when I entered being sick. I wanted to know what was going on, not just have support. So we decided that this organization's focus was going to be to educate people on exactly what's happening, how they can get involved, and make it easy for someone who is as sick as me so that they can do it right from their bed. We send out canned emails that they can copy and send to their legislators and things of that nature. And, of course, we're looking to do bigger and bigger work, and we have in the past year, we have been appointed to the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizational Committee over that works with the United Nations over in Vienna, Austria. And we have also joined the civil society unit of the UN Convention Against Corruption this year to work with the UN bodies on this, because this has become a human rights violation that the United States is openly ignoring and continuing to advance without any acknowledgement to the human rights violations taking place. We were able to take away, in a process of doing the work that has taken place, human consent rules were loosened in the United States, which could be a whole other discussion. So we've been working on a lot of levels of this to try to work with the federal stakeholders and the citizens to make sure that the work goals of the government do not supersede the civil liberties of the citizens.
And would you say the overall goal of the organization is to make drugs like this available to those people who really need them? Would that be the primary goal, or is there more to it?
I would say that there's more to it, but that was one of the primary goals that we started with, because over the past few years, our work really has evolved because of the way that I entered this work is that I came in as a patient not knowing what was taking place and having to learn my way through it. And in the beginning, it was really all about getting that access. And now through our work and our research, we realize that it's much bigger than that. This really goes out to every piece of the healthcare industry, every citizen in the nation, because it will determine the type of treatment that you will get post-operatively and your treatment options that are going to be available to you at all based on a number of factors. So we're really trying to represent this as an overall healthcare issue, because if we cannot take care of people with chronic illnesses and diseases the way that we need to, we're really violating their entire right to healthcare as a whole.
I mean, when you founded this organization, I'm sure you never had any idea that you would eventually be addressing a group of the United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, as you did last October, did you? That's the last thing you thought
not.
Would happen.
Yeah, I've said that many times. So you told me 10 years ago I'd be doing this, I would have laughed. It's just been one of those things that one thing leads to another and leads to another, and I think it speaks to how great of a need this is. And it's been a wonderful thing to see that the United Nations has acknowledged this and does see that there's a serious issue, so that, you know, that we have some major credible voice behind this movement in order to help get the community and the people that need this type of treatment the treatment they need. At the end of the day, nobody likes to be sick, whatever is wrong with you, and nobody should be blocked to a treatment, whether it's opiate, non-opiate, experimental, whatever the case may be, that might improve their life substantially.
Certainly can't. I have to agree with you. It's there. How many people are involved with your organization at this point? Obviously, it's grown a lot since you started it 4 years ago. How would you answer that?
We have a number of ways where we quantify how big we've gotten. We do have global membership because we are with the UN. We have a couple partners outside of the United States. And we also have a number of U.S. partner bases. And through our coalition partnerships and accumulatively, we have a reach of just over 200,000 people, and that's directly through our organization. And we've been able to do that in just a couple years' time. And that's with really no funding, no advertising, because right now we're funded by small public donations at this time, because it hasn't hit the mainstream as a big issue. And since we're kind of fighting against the grain, it's much harder to find, you know, healthcare insurers and things that want to help you move forward, because us moving forward means less profits for these entities. So we're very reliant on public donations at this time. But we've, in my opinion, grown tremendously in under 5 years with bigger odds than most people. I was sick in the beginning, and I also, during this period, did end up, by some miracle of God, I got to have a child during this past 5 years as well. So it's been a very, very challenging and exciting few years, and I think it just speaks to how big this issue is and how much bigger it's going to get in the coming decade.
Wow. Have you seen any positive changes that you think are beneficial to people who are in need of this kind of acute pain medication?
We recently actually just saw a couple really good media announcements that came out that this community has needed for a very, very long time. In California and in Oklahoma, there were judiciary cases that came out and discredited two very powerful propaganda pieces that were used against people with pain to access pain medication. And two separate judges in major lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies tossed out their talking points as nothing more than that, a talking point with unproven, with no proof of science behind it. And the big thing that was then used to keep and restrict pain medicine from people who need it is that essentially exposure equals addiction, that everybody who has become an addict, or 80% of people who have become addicted and had misuse problems, use prescription drugs ahead of time, therefore that's what caused it. There is no evidence anywhere that ever suggests that, and it's actually been disproven that it's much more complex than that. Most people, the majority of people who have been exposed to it for short-term surgeries, we use this medicine every day. We've used it successfully for decades. Most of these people do not become problematic use. And the people who do have problematic use also have used alcohol beforehand. They've used other drugs beforehand before escalating to heroin or other more extreme drugs. So the judges have discredited that piece of propaganda. And we're really hoping that that is going to start being used federally. We need our representatives and the public to stop repeating a lie that is actually backfiring and preventing us from getting the health care we need when we need it. And the problem is most people don't realize it until they get to the ER, and they're not getting the treatment that they expect. And they're getting speeches about how opioids are bad for them when they're screaming in bloody murder, saying, please help me. And they're not getting it anymore.
You know, I'm wondering what kind of reaction you get from the doctors that you go to see yourself, who find out what you've done in this organization that you founded. What do they say to you?
I actually get a quiet support from personal doctors, I think, more just to kind of stay out of the political fray, but more on a personal level, people that I've met out into the social media and in the field are really appreciative of this work, even ones that haven't come out and talked about it much. I've received a lot of private correspondences thanking me for taking a stand against really what's starting to become a corrupt system. What we had is, you know, a perfect storm of the public wanting accountability for people dying from drug overuse, and that the government was looking for solutions. And the solutions that were pursued, although may have been well-intended, have really gone off the rails and have caused more harm than we've ever seen and ever have experienced in terms of both overdoses and people with illnesses getting sicker, becoming disabled who were working, committing suicide. I, unfortunately, myself, lost my father last year, 5 days just after Father's Day, when he chose to take his life because they were not treating his pain for cancer appropriately and leaving him untreated. So even after doing years of this work and trying to put my whole heart into this, it was quite a blow to learn I lost my father still. Because people are not getting the care they should be getting.
Well, if there's anyone listening who would like to get involved to help you out, what do they have to do? And I'm sure you could use help, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have our website, ciaag.net, where you can sign up for our email updates, where we put out a lot of different ways through our emails that you can get involved, also just educational things. So if you want to just learn about the issue and understand what's taking place, you can just sign up there for that. We also have things called membership, which varies from free to a small donation to give you access to a plethora of more information, one-on-one mentoring and things like that, where we can teach you what's taking place, how exactly you can get involved in your state. There are people to talk to. It's easy to talk to them. Send them emails. I know a lot of people are scared to approach people of authority because of some, you know, invisible barrier, but they're people just like us, and the only way that we can fix this is by sending out those messages, almost to the point of being obnoxious if we need to, so that we start being heard and getting the help we need. And I think learning what is going on is the best way that you can learn to be your own advocate, because healthcare is going to get harder over the next 10 years.
No kidding about that. Lauren, listen, thank you so much. We've run out of time. I want to point out, we've been talking to Lauren DeLuca. She's the executive director and the founder and the president of the Chronic Illness Advocacy and Awareness Group. Go to their website. It's ciaag.net, ciaag.net. Get involved, and if you know somebody who needs help, refer them to the website. Thank you so much. It's been fascinating to hear the story.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.